Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to the Conscious Business Radio on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. And I hope you all are planning on having a great Thanksgiving Day with your family and friends. If you do not have any family or friends, or if you know of somebody who does not have any family or friends, please invite them to spend some time with you, because that's what Thanksgiving is about, is to be thankful for everything that you have and to give to others. So in that, I'm going to give you some information or some facts that I dug up about Thanksgiving. Well, first of all, it is widely thought of as 1621 being the first holiday celebration in our country, celebrated by the Pilgrims and the Indians. But actually, the first celebration in our country happened in 1541 when Francisco Vasquez de Coronado and his expedition held a Thanksgiving celebration in the Texas Panhandle. So that's the first one that actually happened. And then President Lincoln declared the last Thursday in November as a national day of Thanksgiving. That happened, and then in 1941, Congress established the fourth Thursday in November as a national holiday. So that's how that all developed. Some other interesting information about Thanksgiving. Americans eat roughly 535 million pounds of turkey on Thanksgiving. That's a lot of birds. And Thanksgiving's football games. Those are the traditional things of Thanksgiving. And the first one happened in 1876, Yale against Princeton. And that... this is my last little fact before I get into other things. Thanksgiving Day is actually the busiest travel day of the year, even more busier than the day before Thanksgiving. I didn't know that. I was thinking it was the day before Thanksgiving. So now I'm going to get into our show, and our show is all going to be about perception management today. How do people perceive you, and how does that affect your business? Well, we all know that the perception of others, whether it's on your brand, how you're selling your products, is really important for having a successful business. People use it pretty regularly to mitigate losses, to make sure that any crisis event does not hurt them too much. Governments use it all the time to manage public perception regarding policies. Use it repeatedly to gain the upper hand in warfare and politics, as we should all know and become aware of. And leaders use it to manage the perception of integrity and competence. Good leaders do that anyways. And if their workforce does not see them as having integrity or ethical, then it's difficult for them to get any kind of efficiency out of them. And nobody wants to work for somebody who doesn't have integrity. I don't want to work for somebody who doesn't have integrity. And so what we're doing is we are welcoming Melissa DeLay to the program. She calls herself the Message Maven, and she will give us insights and the best strategies to implement. She has coached Fortune 100 leaders and executive senior leaders to improve employee, customer, and stakeholder perceptions, as well as motivate strategic company-wide behavior changes. She also facilitates executive crisis media coaching sessions, and she prepares leaders to deliver persuasive messages in print, radio, and or TV interviews. She is the expert at this, so we will be welcoming her soon to the program. But I also want to give you a little bit of information what we're going to be doing after that. We will be having Bob Weiss join us. He's a cybersecurity expert. He is an ethical hacker. He actually is certified in that. But he had a business. Now he's running a department for another company, building their whole security department. on cybersecurity. He knows a lot about the dark web, and he's going to be giving us a tidbit of what the show will be next week with him. He'll be my full guest for the hour next week, and I am airing about 10 minutes of that now. And it's really, the reason I'm doing that now is because it's really relevant to all the things that just happened last week in Paris. And basically, Anonymous, the group Anonymous, he'll explain what that is, but that hacking group has declared war on ISIS. And he explains that, and we talk about that in this little segment. It's really interesting. And then next week, I'll air the whole interview, including that, and you will be able to hear all of that. He's an entertaining guy, and he's entertaining on very serious subjects. So it's always fun to listen to him. So now we're going to welcome Melissa DeLay to the program to talk about managing your perception.
Hi, Melissa. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
So you are the messaging maverick? Is that what you call yourself?
You know, people call me the message maven. So maven. Close and mean about the same thing, but a little different. It sort of caught on when I first introduced myself into the marketplace. And after a while, I started using it as well.
Okay. Well, you're probably not a maverick necessarily if you're really trying to, maybe you are. I kind of am. I like Maven a little bit better for what you do.
Yeah. You know, I do stay behind the scenes if it makes sense to stay behind the scenes. And other times I'm really sort of out in front. But ideally, I'm trying to show people how to be as transparent as they can possibly be, sometimes about things that are really tough to talk about. And so I think the idea of being a message maven comes from helping people figure out how to deliver bad news well so that their reputation's intact, but they get the message across. That's a lot of times what people struggle with. How can I get the results I need? How can I be clear when it's a tough conversation, when I really don't want to have that conversation?
Well, yeah, having a bad conversation, people tend to avoid those at all costs.
They do. And
that can be pretty detrimental to the environment if you avoid the hard conversations, right?
Right. And I think I sometimes divide the lines by gender, but it doesn't really have to be. We do have half of the population that is a bit more blunt, and they are okay with having those tough conversations. And then the other half really hides from it. So I see both sides of that coin, and I have fixes for both problems.
Yeah, because you can't be too blunt either, otherwise
right. It
turns people off. So is it important for you to be authentic, though, when you're doing this, to really be honest and truthful?
It is important for you to be authentic. In fact, probably more important than anything else. When I work with clients who are very nervous and concerned about getting all of the words right, I always say, you know, if you messed up every part of what we have constructed and you spoke from the heart and really gave your most authentic response, you'll be much safer than if you do anything else. So it's probably the most important, but I want people to be prepared. I want them to be authentic and then adjust. And then if they're at all for a loss of what to do, go back to authenticity.
Because at the end, being truthful is the best policy, right?
It's the best policy, although there are things that we can't say to people. There really are things that are perhaps premature or that would cause people to have concern that they don't need to have. There are parts of business and even parts of personal life where a full disclosure of every last detail is detrimental, perhaps for a business and perhaps for an employee as well. So being transparent, being as transparent as you possibly can, is always the goal. There's never a place for a mistruth. There's never a place for lying, but there is a place for learning how to balance between transparency and authenticity and the truth, and protecting the business and protecting other people in a way that makes sense. And just a trivial example, you know, if somebody looks hideous, even though we know that's the truth, we don't tell them that that's the truth. We don't say, you look awful. I can't believe how terrible you look. What has happened to you? You know, we soften that message.
Unless you're my daughter, and then she'll... Kids have a way of just telling you like it is.
They do. They do.
But yeah, so you just, if they ask you, you don't want to say that you look awful. But if somebody asks you, you might say, well, there could be a better choice, right, maybe.
Yep. And I'll tell you what the methodology is for any kind of bad news, whether it's telling somebody the truth about an outfit that they've selected when they're asking you, or somebody asking you the truth about, am I going to lose my job? Is there going to be a downsizing? Is something terrible happening within the company? There's three elements that you always want to focus on. There has to be an element of truth in what you say. You have to speak the truth, and you have to be direct. There also has to be an element of consideration. So you have to be soft about the truth in a way that that other person is going to be able to hear it, and it's going to make it easier for you to deliver it. And the third element, which is one that most people miss, you know, we've got people that are okay with, you know, spilling the truth. You look terrible. They don't have any problem with that. And then we have people that are like, oh, you look wonderful, and I'll dance around the topic, you know. So once I get those two elements figured out, that the third is the one that people really rarely ever consider, and that's just being objective. There's two sides to every story. There's the side of the person that has to hear the bad news, and there's the side of the person that has to deliver the bad news. And if you take both of those sides into account and address them either directly or inadvertently, you're golden. You are able to deliver the news in a way that makes sense. And so even if it's like a bad outfit, it could be something like, what I want to tell you is that you look as good as I've ever seen you, because I know that you invested money in this outfit, and you're asking me because there's something about it that really appeals to you. I wish I had a different answer for you. What I have to say is I have seen you look more like yourself in other outfits, and I'm not sure that that color is accentuating your natural beauty the way that it most would. And so I want to help you. I want to affirm you, because whatever you wear, you're still a great person, but you want me to help you with my assessment, and I want to do it justice, right? So you're being, and that's just right off the cuff, but that's the whole time I'm thinking about this person, which in this conversation is just fictitious. But in my mind, I'm imagining, you know, this is a person that I really care about. And so I'm going to be as considerate as I possibly can, but I'm going to make sure the truth is in there. By the time I'm done saying that, she knows I don't think the outfit is great. I haven't said, yeah, she'll know I love
that,
it.
She'll know that you really don't like it, but you really care about her, and there's other things that she really does look good in. Well, how about when you need to fire someone because they just have been doing an awful job?
Yep. What you have to do with that particular scenario, because it is attached to a person's livelihood, as quickly as possible, you have to get to the truth. You have to say, you almost rip the band-aid.
You are listening to Business Game Changers, and we need to take a short station break.
Are you ever consumed with the idea that something needs to change? You hear Oprah and other inspiring people talk about living your authentic life, and yet it's much easier said than done. Duda, the kick-ass muse, has crafted a world-renowned coaching platform that will help you get clarity on the issues you face, take bold risks, get back your confidence, and brave your fears. To learn more and work with Duda today, visit kickassmuse.com.
What does it mean to be healthy? For each of us, it means something a little different. Discover the art of herbal medicine, a natural way to help our bodies respond better to the modern-day stress and toxicity of our everyday lives. Using organic herbs from around the world, the skilled herbalists at Urban Wellness in Kirkland can help you choose the herbs that are right for your body. Find your herbal solutions for common health issues at urbanwellness.com. That's H-E-R-B-A-N wellness.com.
I'm Sarah Westall, and we are back with Business Game Changers, and Melissa delay, and we're talking about managing perception.
Whenever you have to terminate an individual, because it is attached to their livelihood, you have to get to the truth as quickly as possible. What I have seen others do is they give a lot of background and they say things like, well, you know, like 5 years ago, we started down the path of growing the company and we were looking at diversifying and we were moving this over and that over. And they go into a tremendous amount of detail. Meanwhile, the person on the other side of the table, they can sense the heat in the room. They can sense the anxiety and their dread is just multiplying moment by moment. So I want no background information. I just want a simple, I have some news for you. Effective today, your position is being eliminated, or effective today, you're being terminated from the company. You have to go directly to that and let them sort of take a sigh of relief or let them freak out. However they're going to respond, you have to get to that very quickly. And then once they've had a chance to absorb the information, now you can go into why. Now you can go into what's happening. And the order that I would do is rip the Band-Aid off first, get to the news, get to the truth as quickly as possible, and then say, here's what we have to assist you. Here's what we have to offer you, whether it's a severance or a company that's going to help with job placement, whether it's the amount of vacation that they're going to be able to collect immediately, whatever you can offer from a consideration perspective to help them feel like they're back on their feet, and then go ahead and get into the why. But what typically happens is we want to build this scenario and set the stage, and that just makes it much more difficult for everybody involved. So you immediately get to the truth, then you immediately go to caretaking and what are the things that are going to be available to them. And then you can go, and they may by that time say, well, why is this happening? Because if you think about the human mind, the very first thing when we're scared and when we don't know what's happening is just give it to me straight, you know, tell
exactly.
me the truth.
Yeah.
And then we get like, how am I going to pay my bills? And what about my kids? And what about my spouse? And I need medical insurance, you know, so then we go there. So go and take care of those things. And then finally we can breathe and we're like, wait a minute. Why is this happening to me? And so if you think about just normal human reaction to this kind of news, that's the way you should deliver it, because that's being as authentic and considerate as possible. And that's how you would want someone to share that information with you. And that information has been shared with me. I have been on the delivering end and I have been on the receiving end. And that gives us perspective to know how to care for other people in the rest of our interactions.
Well, you also manage perceptions. How important is it for someone to manage people's perceptions of you?
It's probably more important than anything else in your career. And where I find people missing out on this opportunity over and over again is in the way they manage their time and how they talk about what's happening in their world. For example, I'll give you an example. Today, I had a doctor's appointment that got rescheduled, and it was really complicated, and there were all sorts of elements to it. And if I were unclear about how to manage my perceptions, I might do what the average bear would do. I might call a client and I might say, oh, I have this doctor's appointment that was scheduled for Friday and I had to rearrange it. And I'm really sorry that I'm not going to be able to be there exactly when I said that I would be there. You know, that's what the average bear would do. But what I would do and what I want people to do is send a message that says, of a conflict that's surfaced. I want to be with you exactly as scheduled. I'm so excited to share XYZ with you. Is there any way we can move this back an hour? Or let me know if there are two or three other options and I will clear my schedule to make this happen within the next 24 hours. That's a way to remind people that they are your top priority, even though they understand about doctor's appointments. But what happens when we throw out the details behind something like that is we subject ourselves to other people judging whether or not our excuse is legitimate enough or not. Maybe they just went to a doctor's appointment, so they say, yep, thumbs up, you're great, I'm keeping you in high approval rating, no worries. Or maybe there's somebody that's never been sick a day in their life, or maybe there's someone who is dealing with somebody in their life that's constantly calling in and isn't sick. And so because we can't determine other people's assessments of the things that we say, by all means, limit what we say to people. So it's not that we're being untruthful. We are only disclosing the information that makes the most sense for the person that we are interacting with. And there are always exceptions, and there isn't anything wrong with somebody that you know really well, you know, shouting out to them that you've got a doctor's appointment. But if I had to assess the average professional, I would say 80% of the time they are sort of willy-nilly about what they say and who they say it to, and 20% of the time they're concerned and thinking about their reputation. And I am in the business of flipping those percentages. I want people 80% of the time monitoring and managing the perceptions that other people have of them, and 20% of the time giving themselves a get out of jail free card. And the reason is the results that you're going to get in your life and in your business will exponentially increase if you are managing perceptions to the extent of 80% as opposed to 20. It's about making life easier, because you don't have to fight as many battles and you don't have to work as hard, because your perceptions are favorable and your approval ratings are always remaining high. And for those times where you need to get out of jail free card, you can rest on that perception that other people have of you, and you really don't have to beat yourself up. But the average person is believing that it's sort of luck, or, you know, it'll be fine, or I don't have time to worry about it, or life is too hard. And I'm not trying to make things more difficult for people. I'm trying to make it easier.
Because, that is really good advice. That's absolutely wonderful, because I think people don't realize just off the cuff statements that they make, how that makes them look. And if you just, if you're just more simple in what you say to people, unless you have to say it.
Right. Why say it? And we just have said, we're just a culture that self-discloses, and there's other cultures that don't. And I swear they have easier lives than we have. And it's a challenge to turn it off, to start saying things like, you know, I have a conflict, as opposed to going in the details about what the conflict is. And I'm sure we do it because we want people to know that we wouldn't be canceling if it wasn't some kind of an emergency. But then we look at it and we say, well, is it really an emergency? Well, let me see how much more I can make it sound like an emergency so they'll really know how much I care. When actually what matters to people is, do you have their project ready for them to view? Have you found a way to save them money? Have you helped increase their revenue? You know, it's these business drivers that people are looking for. Or if it's a personal situation, it's that you really care about them and you're going to clear your calendar in other ways, or that you've done everything you could possibly do to make it possible. And this is another area that I like to caution people in. And I just wrote a blog about it, entitled Stop Saying You're Sorry. You know, we say we're sorry a lot, and I've heard other people talk in depth about this particular subject. But the reason I don't want people saying I'm sorry is it just defeats everybody. It defeats the person saying it, and it defeats the person hearing it.
Well, and I don't like it when people say they're sorry when they're not.
Right.
Because that's not really authentic. Bad. don't even go there with me. Let's just deal with the problem. But don't you think that you look almost disheveled, like when you're always apologizing and you're always, it's like you're not in control of what you're doing.
Right. And so what you should say instead is, here's what I intended to have happen. I intended to be here right at 10 a.m. If there was any way that I could have made that happen, I would have. Your time is valuable, and I am going to stay extra in order to make it up to you, or we can schedule another time where I can devote my attention to you. And you know what that feels like? That feels like, oh, that took so long, Melissa, and you had to go into so much detail. But the I'm sorry did absolutely nothing for for you. In fact, you know, I'm sorry I'm late. You know, it feels flippant. It feels
exactly.
like it doesn't matter.
I don't even want to hear I'm sorry. Yeah. If you were sorry, yeah. you wouldn't do it, right?
Exactly. And you know why I believe that we don't like hearing I'm sorry? Two reasons. One, I think it's because our parents forced us to say we were sorry when we were kids and we weren't, right? Tell little brother that you're sorry you punched him in the face and you're sitting there going, oh, I'm not sorry because he kicked me, right? And so I think that's a part of it. But I also believe that over the last 15 years, the corporate scandals that we've witnessed and the celebrity, you know, miserable lives and everybody coming out and saying, I'm sorry. And then they don't mean it.
Yeah. Well, and it's, yeah. How about all the sorries from customer service reps when they do something really awful to you? Well, if you're sorry, you would reverse this charge.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. Yeah, come on, just whatever.
We have to take a short station break. We'll be back in a moment. Hello, we are back with Business Game Changers on the Transformation Talk Radio Network and Conscious Business Radio, and we are continuing our interview now.
Now, is it different for senior leaders to manage their perception than others? I know you work with Fortune 100 leaders. And
I do.
So what is the difference between them and everyone else, or is it pretty much the same?
It's the same, except they have a problem that the average person doesn't have. And the problem that they have is they are super far removed from the day-to-day worker bee. And the further away from that they get, the harder it is for them to empathize and really understand the plight of the average worker, right? And so everyday people, they are so close to other everyday people and, you know, individual contributors. And so they get it. They understand how hard it is to do what they're doing. And so they give grace and they give mercy to other people around them. But Fortune 500, Fortune 100 executives that have sometimes 5,000 people reporting to them, they're so far away from those people and they're so wrapped up in strategy that they often need someone like me to remind them on a day-to-day basis what they're doing and saying and how it's affecting people on the front lines. And it's not true for everyone. There are some Fortune 100 and 500 leaders that do okay in this area, but I would say the majority of them really struggle. And so they also have just forgotten how to pay attention to an individual. So if you're going to get up and give a talk to 5,000 people, you really have to think about one person in particular. Think about your most disengaged employee, the one that really doesn't like you. And you think about them when you're building your talk and you think, all right, if I were saying this to that person, is it going to resonate with them or not? And if it isn't, let me adjust it. And how can I weave in specific examples of people that I do know are working hard, as opposed to what I see time and again, which is you're all doing great, you're all wonderful, you're all working really hard. They're generalized statements, and most of these leaders are well-intentioned.
But that looks flippant, right? That looks like the whole I'm sorry comment.
It does. It does. But they're well-intended. They're just, they're so, it's like to them, it's this mass of people. We'll zero in on a couple of people. And if you only do that as you're talking, whether you're building what it is that you're going to say or when you're delivering it, that gets you closer to a real person. So, and I have seen pretty despicable things happen in my career, and I have seen some very guilty leaders, but I have also seen well-intended, genuine people that just haven't had the benefit of this kind of coaching, and they're suffering just as badly as the people who really don't have good intentions and probably need a moral compass to remind them of, you know.
Well, isn't there a problem too where with all the corruption that is going on, the average worker just doesn't trust senior leadership, right? And they think that they're all corrupt and they think that they're all arrogant, you know.
They do. And they also believe this is a huge a problem with a lot of leaders. They talk so big about billions and millions of dollars, and the average employee maybe is making $60,000-$75,000 a year or maybe less. And what they do when they hear those big giant numbers, especially when they're broad brush generalized statements, is they take that figure, they subtract their salary, and they watch in their mind the rest of that money going directly into the pocket
of them, which isn't true.
No, it's not true. No, it's not true. But that's the perception that they're creating. And so, and even any of my clients that say to me, you know, how can we change people, and how can we improve engagement, and how can we do these things that really seem abstract and almost impossible? Every single one of those difficult scenarios that leaders are trying to fix, it all boils down to communication. What are you saying? How are you saying it? When are you saying it? And what actions are you backing it up with? That's how you change people's perceptions. That's how you change their behavior. That's how you get the right culture in an organization. You communicate in a way that shows people that you care about who they are as a person, and that their individual contributions matter. They roll up to something bigger, and you communicate that on a one-on-one basis the same way that you communicate it to 5,000 people.
Interesting.
And that's how you do it. But sometimes I get exhausted even thinking about how in the world am I going to help all these leaders, because it is so widely not known that this is how you do it. And I often get discouraged even with others in my field, because I sometimes think they're perpetuating the problem, because maybe that's good for business to make it seem complex, and you have to have this and you have to have that. It's very simple. It boils down to how you communicate. And if you look at really well-run smaller businesses, and then you go back 10 years later, or you come back 10 years later and you look at them again, and they're just a complete mess, and you say, how did that happen? The bigger the companies get and the further away they get from the front line, the harder it is for them to communicate in the same way that they were communicating when there were just four or five people there. They're not being as authentic. They're not being as transparent. They're not able to talk about the individuals. Now, just because your company is big and just because things are growing, that doesn't mean you have to somehow find a way to connect with every single person and give an example of everybody. You'll be there for a month and a half giving one talk. But if you give enough specific examples almost every time you talk, everybody else can extrapolate from that example, apply it to their own day-to-day plight, and be like, okay, so yeah, he or she is in the trenches, and they know what it is we're doing. They're not just out there spending their millions of dollars dancing on our graves. Right?
Well, do you think that leaders, kind of the ones who are like entrepreneurs who work so hard, they work, you know, endless hours, do you think there's a little bit of frustration that they have with the workers because everybody thinks that they're just raking it in? And, you know, because entrepreneur, you can get pretty bitter too towards the workers if they think that you're just raking it in and not doing, but you're working like a dog doing everything for people.
Well,
so
and
how
I think
do you deal with that?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, all my career, I have been an advocate. You know, I have a head for leadership and a heart for employees. So I'm an advocate for both groups. So I'm constantly helping employees see from the entrepreneur or the business owner or the senior executive's perspective, and vice versa, because it's about getting in the sandbox and playing well together. So you have to take into account the needs of other people, even if you're the worker. So I don't want to say that it's equal, because it isn't. The leader and the entrepreneur are always going to have the heavier burden. But right now in corporate America and in small businesses, the employees are really suffering from a sense of entitlement, and we need to make that adjustment. Now, as a culture, it's our fault because we let so many terrible things happen, and everybody's witnessed their parents losing their jobs and losing their pension, and we've watched people that we admire go to prison, and we've watched companies go down. And so it is sort of this fight or flight, you know, we're all we won't have a choice because we've got a workforce that's about ready to turn over. You know, we've got baby boomers that are about ready to retire. There's not that many Gen Xers, and millennials are going to come up and kind of fill in the gaps. So we've got to get prepared for how we're going to handle this and start to behave a little differently. But still, bottom line is results are always going to be what matters to companies and what gets employees the recognition that they need and deserve. And sometimes they have to go to a few companies before they find that.
Well, and find the right culture that fits them and
right.
that it just feels, and you have to give a lot before you think that people should give to you. I think it's, you have to internalize and say, okay, I need to work hard. I need to do my job before I expect everybody around me to be doing their job. And then if you're in an environment where you work really hard, you do your job, you do everything you need to do, and then they aren't, that's where you start looking around and go, wait a minute, maybe I'm in the wrong place. The culture's right. not right or whatever. But you got to look at yourself first. But you know what? I could talk to you all day. This is absolutely wonderful.
I enjoy sharing as much as I possibly can in as short a time as allowed for whatever we're doing. So,
oh, wonderful.
Anytime. Yeah,
well,
anytime.
How can people get hold of you?
So you can find me at www.trueperception.com. That's my website. On LinkedIn as well, Melissa DeLay. And when you go to my LinkedIn profile, you can find a link to connect with me via email directly. So I have my direct email contact information on my LinkedIn profile. I also have a link that you can copy and paste in if you would like to have a one-on-one 30-minute, you know, free conversation with me. If anything that I've said today sparks another question, I just allow people to book time with me so that I can answer those questions directly. One, because I don't want to leave anybody wondering what to do next. And two, I'm just always looking for interactions with people and what they're struggling with so that I know how to perfect my services and maybe I write a blog about it. So it just benefits me and it benefits them. And I've been doing that as long as I've been in business.
And you have a blog, correct?
I do. It's called Spill the Truth. And it goes out weekly on Tuesday mornings. And it's about 2 to 3 paragraphs of direct insight and direction on how to handle any bad news scenario or work conflict or managing your perception. And I love when readers write in and tell me, here's this problem I have, and I'll write the solution and post it for my entire audience.
Oh, well, good. I think that would be very helpful for people. Well, fantastic. Thank you, Melissa, for joining us today.
You're welcome, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, have a great day.
You too.
You are listening to Business Game Changers, and we need to take a short station break.
Living Kabbalah. Experience the fruits of the Tree of Life. In this 10-month ascension program, Kabbalah unlocks the potential of your own divine nature to know and accomplish your unique purpose in life. Get ready for real and lasting change.
Enroll now for this 10-month ascension program starting January 30th through 31st. Visit 10thhouse.org. That's 10thhouse.org today to learn more.
We Carry the Light with host Dr. Susan Allison is the show that inspires you to find the light within and shine your light in the world. You'll hear from guests who model how to be the highest, brightest, most evolved, fulfilled, and conscious humans possible. Tune in each Thursday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com and let Dr. Susan help you discover that you carry the unique light that only you can shine.
Welcome back to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to the Conscious Business Radio Network. Now I am going to introduce Bob Weiss to the program. He's our resident security expert that I have on every so often. He has a knack for covering various, very serious issues in a fairly humorous way. So I always enjoy having him on the program. So now let's welcome Bob Weiss to the program.
Hey, Bob, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for inviting me back on. I'm looking forward to it. We've certainly got some exciting stuff going on.
Well, there's always exciting stuff. That's why I like to have you back every so often, because you have to give us your humorous insight into all this cyber war stuff. Well, let's start with Anonymous. Anonymous just declared war on ISIS. First, can you tell people who Anonymous is?
Yeah, Anonymous is a hacker collective, and I will use the term hacker. I'm very reluctant to use the term hacker when talking about cyber criminals. They're not hackers. They're criminals who use electronics, you know. A hacker is somebody who, you know, basically likes to take stuff apart, figure out how it works, extend it, play with it, break it, try to do stuff that wasn't designed for it. But the Anonymous Collective started back in 2002 as they had the board B on 4chan, which is, you can check out at 4chan.org. And it was a non-organized collective of computer enthusiasts who would meet on this board and chat and come up with like little self-assigned tasks that they'd give to themselves, and then they go off and do this stuff. And
they try to do good, right? But they're
afraid. Well, for the most part, I mean, what I want to call Anonymous is, you know, they're kind of like all about civil disobedience. Okay, so they fall into a long line of civil, you know, disobedience groups like, say, the Founding Fathers, or, you know, Henry David Thoreau, or Mahatma Gandhi, or whatever, people who are doing things that are illegal. They're breaking the law in order to create an outcome that's political or social justice or has something to do with freedom or liberty or things like that.
Well, and they wear those masks.
The John Fox masks.
Yeah.
And which just adds to the whole coolness, but
or scariness if you're afraid of clowns.
If you've ever seen the movie V for Vendetta, that's used, you know, in that movie, and I don't know that that's where they got it, but I'm thinking that V for Vendetta may have gotten that mask from them. But in any event, what's happened in the wake of the Friday the 13th attacks in Paris, you know, on Saturday, a French member of Anonymous released, you know, what basically looked like a news release on YouTube where they basically declared war on, declared war on ISIS. And they're going after, of course, websites, recruiter sites, communication channels. They're trying to hack their Twitter feeds and, you know, Facebook stuff and other types of communication channels like, you know, IRC or Internet Relay Chat channels that they use for furthering their agenda.
And they're really
and for
active.
For organizing their military activities against the West.
Is ISIS really active in the black web? Is that where
them? Just about everybody who is doing stuff like that, it is working in the dark web and through Tor. And I've written about Tor a few times. And Tor is an anonymizing service that uses a chain of proxies to kind of hide your location and what have you. But, you know, hey, the guys in Anonymous, they use Tor too. So they know how it works, and they're, you know, they're busy after them. Now I took a look there's a really cool attack, you know, cyber attack website run by a company called Norse, NORSE, at Norse.com. And So I was watching yesterday, and there are just a tremendous amount of attacks going toward Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and Dubai.
And is that where they think it's all coming out of then?
Well, that's where the money is.
Okay.
And, you know, so they're attacking financial accounts or trying to get in and either get at the money or make it impossible for ISIS to get at the money by creating these huge denial of service attacks against these, you know, banking websites in the Arabian Peninsula. But there's interesting clusters of activity coming out of Amsterdam, and there's really a weird bunch of activity going toward the French you know, city in Provence, of Aix-en-Provence, which I have no idea what that's all about. But
so you don't know if the activity is the good guys or the bad guys? You just see a lot of activity?
Yeah, you just see, you know, basically there's a scroll. It's really kind of hard to read, but you can see, you know, the source and destination and what protocol, what, you know, internet protocol is being used in the attack, whether it's, you know, secure shell or FTP or something else.
And do you think they're able to hurt ISIS with this
I think they
war
could,
they've,
you know,
committed?
Yeah, I think they could be a formidable addition to what I'm sure, you know, U.S. Cyber Command and the GCHQ out of, you know, England and the French, whatever their cyber war group is called. I mean, France, you know, France took the gloves off right away and just went at it. And the Russians are right behind them because, of course, the downing of that airliner in Egypt turns out to have been caused by a bomb.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff coming together, and, you know, I hate to be rattling the saber, but it makes me wonder, you know, like, what's up with us?
Well, yeah. Who are we funding?
You know, are we going to wait until something happens here and then attack them? I mean, you know.
But the question, too, is who are we funding? Are we funding some of Anonymous, or are we funding – you hear reports that we're actually arming ISIS. I mean, what's going on with us?
Well, you know, the thing is that when this whole Arab Spring thing came out, and taking a look at sort of the geopolitics of the region, you know, we got all excited with the Arab Spring. And actually Anonymous was helping support that movement too. So they go back, you know, that they've done that. That ISIS went after, or Anonymous went after ISIS after Charlie Hebdo last year. And or earlier this year, I guess. And,
well, they must be tied into the CIA and getting support.
I don't know about that. The people who are in Anonymous typically are anti-governmental types.
Okay.
And for instance, one of the things that ISIS has done that's notable is hacked a U.S. Senate website and put some stuff out there. But
ISIS did this?
Or not ISIS, I mean...
Anonymous,
Anonymous has done this.
So they're not creating very many friends in the government.
No, no. But ISIS, you know, ISIS gets a lot of their weapons from stuff that got left behind when the Iraqi army retreats. And, of course, we provided that stuff. At the time of the Arab Spring, you know, ISIS was really forming. And we were supporting the freedom fighters without asking a whole lot of questions. And so, yeah, I'm sure that there's arms and stuff that we supplied to the bad guys one way or another. But here again, you know, on the dark web, you want to buy guns, they got guns. I mean, the dark web is a really cool...
That's cool. You can buy guns.
Cool underground marketplace for buying stuff that you can't get at Walmart. I mean, you know.
It's really cool. You can buy any kind of top machine gun. Can you get a tank from the dark web?
You know, it's probably possible. You know, there's a lot of old arms floating around the world. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, when we pull out of a place, we don't take all our gear back. You know, in a lot of cases, we leave it behind for, you know, whoever we're nominally supporting. And so, you know, the stuff gets around.
Exactly. You know, the scary part for me is the recent article, which I saw about the Russian nuclear torpedo. And that scares the heck out of me. And The reason why is because it's so powerful, right? You can, it basically will wipe out everything in the area. It can create a 1,000-foot tsunami. It will wipe out everything. Like if it hits New York, it'll kill everybody, even people hiding in bunkers. And yep. It'll make it so that commerce cannot happen there for a long time.
Yep.
I mean, it's a weapon that gets it done. The scary part is, now, will those be accessible in cyberspace, and how much control will they really, you know, that how many really powerful weapons are vulnerable? You know,
that's
the scary part.
Well, and that is a real open question. You know, once this stuff starts to exist, there's always somebody who, you know, needs the money, or who is just a little bent or twisted or whatever, and is, you know, happy to take it in a different direction. You know, in some cases, like, you know, when we were developing atomic weapons at the end of World War II, there were people, you know, in this country who felt it was important to provide that information to the Russians so that there would be a balance, so that there wouldn't be an overwhelming power in the hands of just one country kind of a thing. And, you know, in some cases they did it, shall we say, did the wrong thing for the right reasons, or what, I don't know how we want to phrase it, but, you know, and then it turned out
they weren't very smart in their strategy.
You know, it goes from one to two, and then before you know it, it's three, you know, because the French were hard at it, and then all of a sudden it's everywhere, and, you know, the Pakistanis have it, and the Indians have it, and the Chinese have it, and God knows who the heck, the Iranians evidently are working on it, if they don't already have it, and, you know, so
it's scary because you look at the dark web, if they're selling things as big, you know, the automatic weapons and tanks, if you know that they have military gear, then behind the scenes, that's when you meet them. And then once you start talking to them directly, that's when you get to see what they really have, I'm sure. They're not going to, because it's,
exactly.
They're still protecting themselves as far as,
And, you know, the thing with Russia right now is that, with the fall of communism, the capitalist path that Russian business has taken really, really corresponds nicely to sort of like, Depression era Chicago. There were certainly lots of legitimate businesses running, but there was a lot of stuff that was going on that was just basically very highly organized criminal activity. And we have that in Russia. A lot of Russian cybercrime groups are run by ex-KGB, and in many cases, these companies, and they're, you know, I mean, they're incorporated, they're regular go-into-business type companies. They'll have members on their board of directors from the government. And, you know, so they're
integrated into their government.
So it's, you know, they're protected, and sometimes stuff happens that may not be necessarily what Putin would have preferred, but because, you know, these guys are protected or what have you, things happen, and then it's kind of like, oops, you know, too bad about that.
So I hope you turn in next week to hear the full interview that I have with Bob Weiss about cybersecurity. He is always interesting. We talk about geopolitics. We talk about the war that's going in ISIS, China, India, and Russia. And we also talk about what's going on with satellite warfare with China as well. It's always an interesting conversation. But then he gives you some practical information on passwords and what's going on with that, which is, there's a lot going on in the password world as well, and all the corruption and stealing of identities with your not having a good password. So we talk a little bit about that and how to avoid some of those situations. But I hope you tune in next week. It's always a interesting talk. And you can go to my website to get Melissa's information or any other information on any of the guests I've had on the program at sarahwestall.com. And there you can also sign up for my newsletter. You can like my Facebook page, which would be awesome. Or you can also look at becoming a sponsor. We are looking at going to a national program and going to be in over 120 countries. And we really believe we have the best pricing on the industry to get reach the most amount of people. With the level of listeners that we have, your business can really have great exposure for a fraction of the price of what it will cost to get the same type of exposure in other media formats. And if you don't know, a podcast is the best way to get customers. So I'm going to be on terrestrial radio all over the world and also quite a bit nationally, but also the podcast is available as well. So I hope you look at that if you're a business leader that needs some really affordable but great effective marketing. So go to my website, sarahwestall.com, and you can hear all the recent or all the past episodes of the show. So for now, I hope you have a wonderful day and a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday this week.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific Time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.